This is a great episode. Alice Smith is on a journey right now to implement concept-based learning across different year groups. What does that even mean, you might be wondering? Well, we have two people to explain it all to us with real-world examples. Lynn White is the Vice Principal, Head of Early Years, and Rebecca Gregory is the Learning and Innovation Team Leader. Let's not waste any more time. Come with me now. Welcome to Professional Learning, the podcast that's all about sparking courageous exploration. Each week, we'll be diving into a range of topics to prepare and embed our Book of Dreams work. We'll be exploring the skills and strategies in order to implement these ideas. Becca, Lynn, thank you for joining us on this episode of the podcast. How are you both doing today?
We're great, thank you.
Yeah, we're good, thanks.
Well, great to talk to you both. Thank you very much for giving up the time. Very keen to find out about concept-based learning. But before we do that, actually, Becca, I understand that you're the Learning and Innovation Team Leader. This, to me, feels like one of those roles that when maybe the adults who are listening to this, when they were at school, maybe that role didn't exist so much. I'm not sure. Tell us a bit more about what it actually means.
Well, it's very exciting, as the title might suggest. I am supporting all the amazing teachers we've got here at Alice Smith in thinking about their teaching, their pedagogy, and the learning of children in a slightly more innovative and different way. The main focus of that for this year has been with our junior children and exploring the concept-based inquiry cycle, which we'll touch on today, but today we're generally talking more about concepts, conceptual understanding, and concept-based learning. So I'm a resource at the moment, is how I would describe, and connector.
Excellent. And you mentioned an interesting word there, pedagogy. Some people who don't work in education might not be so familiar with that word. Tell us a bit more about what that actually means.
Absolutely. So that's about how teachers support students with finding out new information. So essentially the crux of learning and how they deliver that, whether that's, you know, more traditional direct instruction or moving towards more holistic ways and more child-centered ways of learning.
Okay, got it. Right. Thank you for that, Becca. And Lynn, Vice Principal, Head of Early Years. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I think my role really, again, supporting the fantastic team of early years educators we've got here, Alice Smith, making sure that we work together to ensure the best possible experiences for our children from preschool, so that's the three-year-olds, all the way through to year two, which is our seven-year-olds. Working alongside resources or resource people, just like Becca, the learning and innovation team, our curriculum team, our year leads, again, really coming together, working collaboratively to support the future direction of Alice Smith.
See, I love all of this because not only do we have these new roles that didn't exist a long time ago, but it strikes me that putting technology to one side completely for a moment, we seem to invest, or senior leadership teams in schools seem to invest so much more time in understanding the ways in which people learn and the best ways for them to learn. So really keen to find out more about concept-based learning. But we've mentioned this phrase a couple of times. One of you, just tell us a little bit about concept-based learning, what it actually is.
So concept-based learning has its premise in concepts, and concepts can be described a bit like a box. So they're a big idea in which smaller ideas are contained. And we use these to help us make a bridge or a link between the abstract and the real world. So concept-based learning is an educational approach that emphasizes deeper understanding, not just surface level, and the ideas that are transferable as opposed to the more rote memorization of facts. So rather than learning about single subjects in isolation or even as themes, concepts allow us to make those connections between, across disciplines, areas, different points in life that we can revisit them. And I think Lynn's going to share some really specific examples of that.
Okay, before we do that, Becca, just tell us, is this something then that applies to all subjects in schools, or is this, I mean, this isn't like a separate subject or part of the curriculum or anything like that, is it? Is it? It's an approach to teaching and learning, but does it apply to all subjects then?
It absolutely can, without a doubt. Yeah, from preschool, as Lynn was describing, right up to year six, concepts are everywhere and in everything. How you teach it might look slightly different. So you might not always do a conceptual-based approach in some subjects, but in juniors this year, we've been looking at concept-based learning across a multitude of subjects while still keeping some discrete, but that's not to say they couldn't evolve into more conceptual-based subjects in the future.
Okay, got it. Now I'm dying to hear some examples about how this actually looks in school in everyday learning. Lynn, tell us a little bit about this.
Sure. So I think earlier in the term, we had a parent workshop focusing just on this, because as you said, it may be very different to what we experienced at school ourselves. And one example that I use, which is really, it's quite a strange example for me being head of early years, because it's something that I experienced in secondary school, but it's been a really great hook for parents to understand what this approach is like and what it could mean for their children. And what I've said is, you know, I remember being in secondary school and learning all about a specific war, you know, World War II. Now, when I learned about that, I learned about the facts, the figures, the people, and that's what I was asked to regurgitate. So very much on a surface level, very important event, but that's what I was asked to remember. And that's what, as a child, I felt was important. A conceptual approach would really have been if I'd learned about that war, but the focus had been more on, for example, peace and conflict resolution, and even government, if you like. Those things are much broader. They're much more transferable. So if I learned something now, perhaps in year six, for example, that was related to a historical event, if I learned about peace and conflict, that's something I can transfer to things from the past. I can transfer it to the future. I can also transfer it to, you know, conflict resolution in the playground. It's something that's really enduring and will commit to the memory. So as Becca said, it's really moving beyond that knowledge and thinking about what Lynn Erickson, who's a real expert in this field, describes as, you know, enduring. It's really going to stick, and I'm going to be able to use it in different situations. So it's transferable. And that's what we really want. We want our children to move forward with this conceptual understanding that, you know, it's not just revisited at year three and then perhaps never seen again, but I can draw on it. I can draw on it in my academic life, and I can draw on it in personal connections, real, you know, that real life application that we're striving from. Knowledge perhaps fits one box, as Becca said before, whereas those conceptual understandings can transfer. And that's really what we're looking for.
Okay, that's really interesting to hear that, because, you know, I think a lot of people understand the idea of, you know, taking your Second World War example of knowing that the Second World War started in 39, finished in 45, however many millions of people tragically killed during that awful event, clearly. But is this something then which is taught instead of those facts and figures or alongside the facts and figures? Tell us a bit about how that works.
Yeah, I'd say alongside, and I think that's a really important point to note. So thanks for raising that. It's something that parents have asked about as well, because again, their experience of school was probably predominantly knowledge. And what we're not saying that knowledge is not important. It absolutely is. But it is exactly that. But where are those deeper understandings? So yes, it's very important to know this, but what is the really important part that I want to take away? I mean, another example from my end of the school would be, you know, when children are exploring in maths, for example, when they're exploring something like 2D and 3D shapes, we're not just saying, you know, holding up something and saying, you know, children, this is a sphere. Everybody repeat, this is a sphere. And moving on, we're thinking about, we're asking questions that encourage children to think conceptually. So we might say, we might put all of those objects out and let children have time to explore. And we might be asking them questions like, you know, what is this? How does it work? How does it change? How is this connected to something else? And the way we would describe that in terms of concepts is a real transdisciplinary approach. Because if I can think about that in maths, then when I approach something perhaps in English, it might be poetry, I can still be asking those same questions. What does it look like? How does it work? How are the parts connected? And the more we repeat that and the more that commits to memory and part of our being, I feel that we think critically, we think creatively, and we go beyond the knowledge. Mm. But as a school, we've made it really clear that knowledge is still absolutely important. But we feel this conceptual understanding just takes us a little bit deeper.
Mm. And sort of to add to that as well, I believe it's Lynn Erickson again, but there's the model, the 3D model, and they describe how there's knowledge and there's facts. And that was very much a 2D model originally. But by adding concepts on top, it turns it into a 3D model of understanding. So knowledge and skills are still equally important, but that those concepts help tie it all together. And I believe Julie Stern, she actually posted something the other day that was a fantastic image of how concepts just almost act as an organizer, like a physical organizer. If I've got these facts and I can link them, then that helps the brain to make those connections much more easily.
Okay, got it. Becky, you mentioned Julie Stern. Who is she for a moment?
She is an expert in the field. She has written a book called Learning That Transfers. And she is, yes, an absolute wealth of knowledge.
Sounds like a mover and a shaker in this field. Maybe somebody
Absolutely.
For us all to check
Brilliant.
Out in that case.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the difference with facts and figures, I imagine that they are easier to test children on in times of examinations. How do we go about testing their learning or verifying that they've actually picked up on what we've been teaching them?
That's a fantastic question and something that we're definitely exploring as a school at the moment. One way that we're looking at it in particular at juniors is the idea of generalizations. So by the end of a unit, rather than a test, it's more, can they put these concepts that they've been learning about together and form a generalization? That means to be able to explain how they are linked, possibly give them a context sometimes to show that they really understand it. And to be able to say what they're going to know next, sort of that element of transfer and how they can take that learning into a new situation. For us, those are the two things we're really focusing on at the moment to see, you know, evidencing that learning. I'm sure Lynn's got some other ideas to add to that as well.
Yeah, I'd say in the early years, what's really helpful is that, you know, our 3- and 4-year-olds, even if they have the knowledge, don't always know how to articulate it yet at this stage. And having highly trained, experienced early years teachers who are used to observing children. The questions that we talked about before, Simon, when we talked about, you know, what does it look like? How does it work? That can be articulated just by observing children at play. So we can see, you know, if it was perhaps that, again, if we went back to that 2D and 3D shape situation, watching a child and watching them roll a sphere, and trying to see, you know, seeing them doing the same thing or trying to do the same thing with a cube, for example, we can see that they're testing out their theories. So it's really about, for us, I think it is about developmentally appropriate practice. So in those, with those 3- and 4-year-olds, as we move towards this approach, we see it through our inquiry approach at the moment. We're used to observing children at play, taking anecdotal notes around that, and then the next steps that involves. And then as we are moving into year 1 and year 2, we can have those conversations, and where it's very much in the questions that we ask. So instead of having those, you know, closed questions with the yes, no answer, it really is about encouraging that culture of curiosity, if you like. So you might hear practitioners saying, you know, tell me more, or I wonder if. So it really becomes a sort of non-threatening space where knowledge doesn't have to be just the answer, but lots can be gleaned through children sharing that deeper understanding. And it may not always be accurate. It may not always be the end result yet. But within that explanation, there are glimmers of prior knowledge. There are glimmers of connection that as a teacher, we can hook on and then plan for those next steps.
This is so interesting to hear all of this. And I mean, this whole podcast channel is all to do with things that are happening in school and things that are happening in the world of education. This is not about me at all, but I'm going to tell a super quick story about when I was at school myself. I had two different teachers in the same department, in the science department. One teacher was dreadful, and I remember her for being so dreadful. And what she used to do was to read from a book, and we all had to just write down these facts and figures. I can tell you, I don't remember a single one of those facts and figures. There was another teacher in the same department, and she took a different approach where, actually, she was in the math department, forgive me, and she was talking to us one time about spheres and about circles and about 3D and 2D. And the way that she explained this to us was nothing mathematical at all, but what I now think was a concept-based learning, where she said to us, imagine someone who exists in a two-dimensional world and a three-dimensional object like a sphere comes to visit them. And as this sphere passes through their world, they actually don't see it as a sphere. They see it as a circle, which just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then as the sphere passes through and leaves, it gets smaller and smaller and then just disappears. The point that she was making was about how we understand and interpret things through the eyes of somebody else, as opposed to just seeing things through our own eyes. I'm not sure whether that was concept-based learning. Maybe I've missed the mark completely. You're both smiling, so maybe I'm on the right track. Tell me something about this.
No, that sounds fantastic. She sounds like she was very much engaging you as well. And I think that's part of the other element that we have been doing in juniors is the inquiry, as Lynn mentions. We've got concept-based learning, which is what we're mainly talking about today, but we're also following an inquiry cycle in order to enable and empower the students to drive the learning. So it's much more of a deductive approach rather than an inductive. And what you're describing there sounds really similar, because part of that cycle is to be really engaged and interested and want to know more and ask questions, as opposed to be very passive and just listen to these facts and figures being told at you, talked at you.
Amazing. Really good to hear. Tell us a bit more then about how these are transferable skills into other parts of children's lives.
Well, I suppose it's coming back to that, isn't it? It's how these are the fundamental building blocks of everything. If we've got a really strong conceptual knowledge and understanding of the world, then we can interpret the world in a very different way to just knowing facts and figures from, as you described, their one perspective. I think it's going to really allow the world to open up. And, you know, we've said many times in school, and it's being said everywhere, we don't know what the future is going to look like, what the world of work is going to look like for a lot of our children. We need to prepare them to be these open-minded thinkers that look at the bigger picture rather than just regurgitate facts, because let's be honest, AI can do that for us now. We've got to skill them in these other ways of thinking differently, thinking broader, thinking deeper, and challenging and questioning.
That's a really good point as well, Becca. You mentioned about AI, and I guess, you know, constant access to the internet, which is what, you know, most people seem to have, and increasingly so, I imagine, in the future. Surely that does mean that knowing these facts and figures becomes less important, because we can easily retrieve that information. It's knowing what to do with that information in order to change lives.
I think so. And I think to Becca's point, it is about not being that passive learner. You know, how this relates to their real life, from my experience, is having children who are going home from school, or, you know, are out and about in the world, and they are asking questions, and they're encouraged to question what's around them. You know, they are using conceptual questions, or they're applying learning. I think when we have knowledge, sometimes it's boxed up and we move on. So it's like, we've learned that piece of knowledge, we don't need to talk about it anymore, we move forward. Whereas that conceptual understanding, you know, for example, the concept of sustainability, I may have been focusing on that at school and I may have moved on from that particular area. However, you know, it's important to me. I've really understood it. So I'm going to apply it to something I see in Malaysia. I'm going to apply it to something I see outside of school. I think one of the descriptions that Lynn Erickson also gives, along with enduring and transferable, is timeless. And I love that. I love that, you know, a concept doesn't go out of style. It doesn't go out of time. It's something that they really hold on to. So I think what you see in this situation with conceptual learning is much more of those connections to real world situations, connections between disciplines. It's not hanging on that fact and figure that you describe, Simon. It's about those big ideas, as we call them. And I think that's a lovely way to talk about it, even with the youngest children, as we head on our journey with concepts here. It's talking about, you know, big ideas. So not just what do you know, but what do you wonder?
I love this. I really do. I'm dying to know any more examples you have, you know, anything in the early years, anything in juniors, anything at all like that.
Absolutely. There was a brilliant example in year four recently who have been looking at civilizations. And year four chose to look at civilizations because many of our juniors year groups did, but they looked through it with the lens of structure and power. And the cohort investigated how structure can mean very different things in very different disciplines. So they looked at structure from the perspective of power and hierarchy and the pharaohs, but they also looked at structure through physical structures and the pyramids. And the generalizations, as I mentioned earlier, they were coming up with were, you know, the stronger the structure, the more power something has, which for a 9 or 10 year old to be able to make those links across different subjects was absolutely phenomenal. And they also had a look at structure in technology and in community and innovation. And by removing the constraints of we're only learning about Egyptians and instead opening it up and just using Egyptians as a small case study, they could explore these big ideas on so many more levels. And the learning that took place was just phenomenal. I wish there was a video element here I could show you, because I've got some great videos of the children's discussions on this. And it's magical when you see it in action, because you can see the depth of learning. And when you asked the question earlier about how do we assess for this, it does look different. It isn't a paper assessment, but the conversations, when you can listen into a conversation of a 9-year-old and their understanding, it's so much more. impressive and the depth. I think that's the most important.
I think one of the things I would say to that as well is that it's changing teacher conversations. So for me in the early years, at the moment, preschool reception in year one, we have that inquiry-based, play-based learning, and we're going to follow the juniors' leads and we're going to start infusing. I would say concepts are already there. Conceptual learning has always been part of that kind of approach, but perhaps just being a bit more explicit about it. But I was in a year two meeting today, a planning meeting, and the teachers are moving on to a new unit that has a real conceptual focus. And they're looking at concepts like location, sustainability. And the conversation really opened up into a really rich, you know, creative dialogue where in the past, perhaps, if they'd introduced something like this, they may have said, you know, they would have told the students at the beginning, we're going to be learning about location, boys and girls, a location is. But instead, they really took a step back and thought about, you know, how can we provoke the children's thinking? How do we engage them? How do we make them active in this? And it was really about how will we find out from them what we think, what they think a location is, first of all. And as we moved through that planning cycle with the team, they did that at every eventuality. So we moved on to sustainability. Again, rather than it just being perhaps, you know, what field trip should we go on or how will we explain sustainability to children? It was how will we elicit that from them and how can we build upon that? And I think one of the phrases I like to use quite a bit is, you know, so what and now what? So, and I really feel that lends itself to conceptual understanding. You know, the so what is, why is that worthy of knowing? And it helps as a teacher as you move into this approach because you have a ton of ideas, especially when you're planning collaboratively with a group. And it really is about sort of sifting out, you know, what is that enduring, timeless, engaging, student-led, and what is perhaps just something that we may have done in the past, but we don't have to do anymore. So it's been really good to see those conversations happening and teachers really, really reimagining their roles. They really do see themselves as facilitators of that understanding rather than, you know, what we may have experienced or parents may have experienced from teaching in the past. And like the example you gave about, you know, what you loved in maths as an approach and what you didn't.
And when it comes to the teaching staff embracing these new ways of teaching children, is that something which the staff within Alice Smith have been like very happy to adopt?
They've been fantastic, honestly, absolutely fantastic. They are. Planning meetings have become so much more engaging and fun, as Lynn just described there. And it's so much less about, oh gosh, who's making the slides for this versus, you know, what can we do to provoke the interest and get the engagement and to capture the children's questions. And the staff have been phenomenal, haven't they? They've been absolutely amazing. And it is quite a shift from what can be described as traditionally British.
And I think as well, it's about, again, I felt in the year two meeting today and to our earlier point, it's not about taking away those knowledge-based outcomes, perhaps around geography and science and history. They're still there, but it's what your role in that is as a teacher. How do you ensure that there's a personalized journey? So for example, Becca and I could be teaching in the same year level. She may find out that her children already know and understand about something, and she may decide to go in a different direction. She may even go at a different pace. But we are always clear about what the understanding is that needs to happen, the knowledge outcomes that need to be hit, but the way we can go there, and I suppose it's that notion of, you know, you have coverage that is on this level, that surface level. What is worthy of knowing? How do you go deep? And that is that so what and now what. I think the so what is why is it important? But we really want the children to take that now what. I've learned this. I have this deeper understanding. What are you going to do with that? And we're seeing that coming from the work that the juniors are doing.
Absolutely. You're already getting students who are sort of making that connection between the concepts and one that was done in term one on exploration, and it actually came up naturally. And the children were so excited when they realized that connection existed. Oh, that's exactly like, and those links, again, it's those light bulb sparky moments, which are fantastic. And I also think it's the idea that the students might not know what location is, but it's making sure we really go into depth on that and we give them the scaffolds to understand these concepts. And I think sometimes that can get missed. There can be presumptions that, you know, well, you know, they're eight, they know what location is, but what does it mean to you? What does it mean in this context? I think that's really...
I think, again, with parent workshops, what we've seen that's been really successful is we've seen real sort of light bulb moments for parents, haven't we?
Absolutely.
Really linked to the purpose of this and what it means for their children. You know, we're here in Malaysia. You know, we have a diverse group of international learners, international staff. You know, and as Becca said before, we're thinking, you know, how relevant is perhaps the Stone Age in isolation or the Vikings in isolation? But what is it we want them to know? Is it, are we looking at ancient civilizations? And even within that, what do we want to know about ancient civilizations? Is it innovation? And it might be that we look to those ancient civilizations through the lens of the concept, innovation, and then apply that to now, and then apply it to how we're going to be innovative moving forward. And I think when we give examples like that, parents really understand that. They see that as a, that is worthy of knowing, because innovation is going to change. You know, what we think is innovative now is not going to be innovative a few years from now. So I think parents get that. I think teachers see that. They understand that purpose. And I actually think for the older students, they can see the purpose in their learning. It really takes away that, you know, oh goodness, why are we learning about that? Because we're taking them to that bigger picture, that big idea. I think that's much more successful. And as you've said a few times, Becca, much more engaging. You know, we're really seeing children being active participants, aren't we?
Without a doubt, without a doubt.
Ancient civilizations leading to innovation going forward. You know, that when I woke up this morning, that's not a phrase I would have thought that I'd be hearing today. But you mentioned about light bulb moments, and that's certainly a light bulb moment for me. You know, the idea of something from way back in the past being useful for our approach going forward in life as a civilization today is amazing to hear. It really is. It's been great hearing about these light bulb moments, and I really appreciate the pair of you giving up your time. If anyone's been listening to this and they maybe wanted to find out a little bit more about it, how could they get in touch with either of you?
That's a great question. I'm guessing they can reach out to us via email. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can absolutely reach out. I think what I would recommend as well is that we've hosted quite a few parent workshops this year, but it's always great to hear from parents. You know, we've tried to end workshops recently with a range of options for parents to be able to feedback. What would you like to know next? Do you still have any outstanding questions? So I think getting in touch with us directly at our email addresses. But, you know, please ask if there's something else. You see the calendar and the opportunities for workshops, but, you know, if you would prefer a hands-on session, if you'd like a one-to-one conversation to see what that means for learning looking forward, then we're always here.
And we're still very much on a journey as well. We've come such a long way in best teaching and learning, but we're not done, and there will be a lot more to do, and that will continue. And I know involving parents, involving teachers, and the link between us here at primary and secondary is fantastic. So watch this space as well, because there's a lot more to come.
Fantastic to hear all of this. It really is. The pair of you, thank you for giving up your time. Becca Gregory, Lynn White, I appreciate you being here. I'm sure that everybody else does as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
And a quick message for you, the listener. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast channel. We've got some awesome content coming out in the future, and you wouldn't want to miss it. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.